The Walking Dead Talk Through Episode 70, Time for After Review.
Welcome to The Walking Dead Talk Through, a fan podcast dedicated to The Walking Dead on AMC. Join us each week as we discuss the characters, story developments, and theories of The Walking Dead. Send in your thoughts about each episode by calling 304-837-2278 or by visiting our feedback page at goldenspiralmedia.com/feedback. And now, here's your hosts.
And welcome to this fantastic episode. I think we're in for quite a treat of the Walking Dead Talk Through. I'm Brian.
I'm Rima.
And I'm Kristen.
And we are here to discuss the Walking Dead Season 8, Episode 7, titled Time for After, written by co-executive producers Matthew Negrete and Corey Reed, and directed by someone I don't know, Larry Tang. And as you might have guessed, big shocker, I am pleased to have two guest hosts with me. And this is one that I've been looking forward to for a few weeks now. Why don't you guys introduce yourself? Rima, I'll let you go first.
Okay, yeah, it's really great to be here, Brian. I appreciate you asking me to co-host one of these episodes with you. I've really been looking forward to it. So I co-host a podcast for the Netflix series called Stranger Things. Some of you may have heard of that show. Our podcast is called Strange Indeed. It is on the Podcastica Network. I co-host that with my friend Sean. And yeah, you can find us there on iTunes, Stitcher, and Spotify if you like. You like that show. So yeah, check us out.
And it's a fantastic podcast. And
thank you.
You may have heard Rima. She's been guest hosting on several other of the Podcastica podcasts, like The Walking Dead Cast and Game of Microphones. And from Game of Microphones, please welcome Kristen.
Yay. As Brian stated, I am a new co-host for the Game of Microphones, a Game of Thrones podcast, tiny little show called Game of Thrones, with my very knowledgeable partner, Sarah Duncan. And right now we're covering the entire series as a rewatch full of very spoilery spoilers. So just listening or if you like rewatching the show over and over again and dissecting it all down, this is the podcast for you. So thank you, Brian, for having me on. And I really appreciate tonight, and I'm looking forward to it. I think it's going to be fun.
Yes. And we've picked out a very special episode. one that can be picked apart, I think. So let's go into news, ratings, and info, and errata.
There's a couple weird stories on the news.
So, errata, and it's a very minor errata. I just wanted to clarify. I said that last week that Season 4, Episode 6, Live Bait was my least favorite episode. That was wrong. I got it confused with the next episode, which was Season 4, Episode 7, Dead Weight, where I was literally screaming and throwing things at the TV because I was so mad that the governor was, doing his heel turn and becoming like the psychopath that, we had known when I was just starting to feel sympathy for the guy in the previous episode. So.
I actually equally hate both of those episodes, so I don't think you could really go wrong either way.
Yes, but I love the next episode. The following episode, one.
Yeah, I know what it is.
Okay.
I too far gone. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's where Herschel gets his head chopped off. I can't even handle it. Oh. I can't even handle thinking about it.
Yeah, that was rough.
It was rough. Okay, so I don't have any info about this episode specifically, but to go into ratings of the episode, which we're recording again a day early, and ratings usually come out on Monday. So I do have ratings from last week, which is season 8, episode 6, The King, The Widow, and Rick. The Walking Dead was actually up from the previous week at 3.57 in the 18 to 49, and it got back above 8 million again at 8.282. And that's versus the previous week's 3.42, 18 to 49, and 7.845 million, which was, you had to go back a long time to see something that low. And we also even have the Live Plus 3. That usually comes out the following Sunday, and it did this time. The Walking Dead was up 1.7 points in the 18 to 49 to 5.3, which is 47% increase. So basically 47% of the people that watched the show watched after, and up at least in the coveted demographic, and 3.586 million, new viewers to 11.878, which was up 42%. Talking Dead, of course, it was the big reveal that week, of the crossover character. It got a 1.32 in the 18 to 49 at 3.219 million viewers. And that's up from the previous week's 1.09 and 2.62 million in the Live Plus 3. And these numbers don't add up. I hate that. I go look at the site and it's like, that doesn't add. Anyway, so I was a math major, so it bothers the heck out of me.
Oh, makes sense.
Yeah. So in the Live Plus 3, Talking Dead was up 0.3, which brings it up to a 1.6 in the 18 to 49, up according to TV by the numbers, up 23%. And somehow up 671,000, which magically in some weird way of addition makes 3.893 million, up 21%. And I challenge you to add 3.219 to 0.671, and you will not get 3.893.
I'm going to take your word on that.
Yeah. 21% more viewers for that. So, one bit of news, and I guess this is kind of, an additional thing from last week's crossover. Formerly, I guess she's best known from Lost, and I know she was in Taken. She was, Liam Neeson's daughter. Maggie Grace, joins the cast as, full-time, star on Fear the Walking Dead for season 4. So I don't want to go into this too much, but it's probably a good time to get your reactions, what you think about the crossover and Morgan going over.
Well, I'll just jump in because Kristen will probably have more to say on this than what I do. I know how she thinks. We're friends, so I know how she thinks. It's fine. I want it to be done well. At the end of the day, regardless of how this crossover is going to happen, and I feel though the more that I'm hearing about it, because I am hearing that there's going to be a time jump in Fear the Walking Dead, so I'm not sure that I'm really thrilled with that. I really like Fear being its own thing. I don't want it to be the Walking Dead 2.0. I'm fine with these casting announcements. I like Maggie Grace. I think she's great. They've had some really good casting announcements. This latest announcement doesn't bother me. I'm just concerned in how it's going to be handled. I just want it to be done well. I don't want it to be another Walking Dead 2.0, especially with based on this current episode that we're going to be talking about today.
Yeah, I think that's the main thing is the execution, because they can come up with something and it may sound crappy, and it's all in the execution. It could end up turning out great. Okay, Kristen, what do you think?
Well, I mean, I've said a lot of it in threads. So I just don't want to, you know, I don't know what is that phrase? Beat a dead horse. Or something. Yeah. I'm not as much of a fan of Fear the Walking Dead as I am The Walking Dead. I'm not as invested in the characters. I do like the fact that they don't use really known actors. Frank Delane was a young Tom Riddle in the Harry Potter movies when he was a kid, and that's pretty much all I recognized him from. Alicia Debnam Carey was in The 100. And other than that, I mean, you know, Kim Dickens, whatever. But, you know, these are really big names that are coming on, and that always concerns me. I remember that The Walking Dead proper did not to use a who was it? Somebody said that, and I said, "That's great, I love that Walking Dead proper." Yeah. It was P.D. Sinderson. I know that that The Walking Dead said that they almost didn't cast Michael Cudlitz because they thought he was too big of a name and he had done too much stuff, and that was going to overshadow the show. And it ended up being really wonderful, but Michael Cudlitz is an amazing actor. You know, I don't know that these new actors have those chops. But I also don't want the show to sell out, and I feel like it's going towards sellout status, but, you know, like Rima said, we'll see what happens. I don't like the fact that it's being called a reboot. I don't think after the most successful season that they've had that they should call it a reboot. I don't think it's the show necessitates a reboot. Just because you're changing the showrunners doesn't mean that you're rebooting the show. They didn't reboot Walking Dead when they got Scott Gimple. You know, there's no reason to do it now. So,
yeah.
Well, that's my biggest problem.
I think the ones that are calling it reboots are mostly the ones that are writing articles about it. I don't know how much of it, you know, from the producers are saying that it's a reboot, but the one thing that I wonder that they may do, and I didn't mention this on the last episode, so I'll mention it now, is I wonder if the two shows are going to be on the same timeline. If AMC has this brilliant idea of doing like a crossover every season, you know, kind of like what they're doing on CW with the DC characters and all that. I mean, that could be good and it could be terrible. It could be very terrible, you know? Mm-hmm. And the other thing, and I know, Mark Kirkman, who is no relation if you didn't listen to the previous episode, he has been kind of piloting the idea that the two shows would merge, which I think with Morgan there, there is a possibility of that. I don't know. I tend to think that that's probably not going to happen, but we'll see. All right. Well, we should move on to the actual episode that we have to talk about. So, Rima, you are first. What did you think of Time for After? Or do you want to tell us after?
Very good, very good. Well, I'll give you my rating. I mean, this just a general overview and my rating. You know, out of 10, I'm going to give this 5 out of 10 brains. This was not one of my favorite episodes. I liked it just slightly. It might have went up slightly on that Richter scale for me, just a little bit on that third rewatch. It took me 3 times to watch this episode to really kind of understand everything that was happening and to understand Eugene. So it was not one of my favorites. There's some good things, but definitely not a very good penultimate episode for me. That I consider penultimate episodes for The Walking Dead usually are a little bit better. And this one, in my opinion, was not.
I can just imagine. So if you had only watched it twice, what was your episode or your rating going to be then?
Probably at a 4.
Oh, ouch.
Not great. That's low for me because I'm a big fan. I'm not a poo-pooer on this show. I am a big cheerleader for this show. And I always, you know, tend to love episodes that others, you know, find fault with. So for me, this is kind of a, you know, this is a hit for me. This is a hit in the gut for me.
Yeah. I mean, I've heard you several times on Walking Dead cast and, you know, you've always given it a higher high, mm-hmm. not a high rating, but I'm saying like, you know, a better rating than this. I don't ever. And of course, on that show, it's out of 5. So this would be equivalent to a 2.5, which sounds pretty low. All right, Kristen.
Yeah, Remus stays really positive too. So yeah. it's a big one when she's not so positive, because you are a determined girl to be positive.
Yes.
I try to be. I mean, if there's fault, I'm not going to lie about the fault, and I'm not blind to faults in the show, but I try to focus more on the positive and know that there's a reason for things that are happening and why they're showing us what they're showing us. I mean, they're taking an hour, you know, they're taking this whole one episode out of the first half, out of this first 8 to tell us or show us something. So I try to keep that in mind and, mm-hmm. you know, but this one was a hard one for me. So.
Yeah. All right, Kristen. What did you think?
I gave it actually a higher rating. I gave it 7.75 out of 10 worn out cowboy boots.
Nice.
You know, a lot of that has to do with the fact that I am trusting Scott Gimple this season. You know, a lot of people are really, really upset about not knowing the plan or not understanding what's going on, or, you know, the fog of war, or what are people doing? And I'm really enjoying just seeing how this is playing out. And I've just kind of allowed myself to know, okay, I don't get to know the plan. But I know that Scott Gimple lands his plane every time. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I'm just waiting to see how that happens. And I like puzzles. I love puzzles. So, yeah, it's just another weird, funky puzzle piece that my dog on for a while. It'll fit.
Well, the thing that I find, and I'm going to kind of tail on what you're saying, I always find that The Walking Dead, well, I won't say always, but I'll say most of the time, plays better when you get to binge the season or the half season versus having to watch it week to week. I don't think this show is alone in that. I think Game of Thrones, I can say the same kind of thing, but it is one of those things that I think being able to watch them back to back to back and see those pieces kind of fit into, you know, where they're supposed to go, it doesn't bother you as much as like having to simmer over a week trying to figure out what the heck's going on.
I do think you're right on that. And I think that I think TV producers and writers and showrunners are getting to know the fact that their audiences like to binge. And I think that they're starting to play on that. And I appreciate mm-hmm. that.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, anyway, for my rating, I'm actually right there with you, Kristen. I'm just ever so slightly higher. I gave it 8 chomp down chodes.
Perfect.
And in a little bit of inside baseball, it took me 3 times to say that right. But you won't get to hear those. All right. So now we have some listener ratings. So Rima, why don't you give the first?
So first listener rating is from PBN Zane, and they give it 8 out of 10 potato casseroles.
Yummy.
I'll pass.
Yeah. Like the help.
Yeah.
Cheryl Rainey Fox says 7 out of 10 homemade gliders.
Malika, who was a guest host a few episodes back, she says, based on an initial watch, I give it 9 Walker head kebabs.
Wow, that's high.
Wow, that's high.
And I actually loved the Walker kebab. I thought that was really cool.
Mm-hmm. That's nice. Tilly Creary says, I thought this episode was fine. I'll give it a 7 out of 10 bad decisions.
just say Daryl's.
Right. Yeah, that's good.
Claire Lang Redderer says, I liked this episode. I thought it was a lot better than last week's. I would give it an 8 out of 10 Rick sculptures. Okay, if we're handing out Rick sculptures, I want 10 out of 10, but that's, you know, neither right. here nor there.
Right. I want the one after.
Yeah. I did like it that when Rima, when she said, I'm going to sculpt you, but without those. And I'm like, yes.
Yes.
drop them right
that's,
now.
That's where my mind was. Sculpt yeah. you after without those.
I would lick him. I just love that man so much.
I'm right there with you, my friend.
That's why I love you.
That's why I love you.
Well, Negan would say,
are you kidding me?
No.
Now look, yeah, I love JDM. I do. But Rick's an OG.
Mm-hmm. And he's so pretty when his hair gets curly from sweat.
And when he tilts his head and gives you that look.
Yes. The Shane look.
Yes.
And on this very special estrogen induced episode.
Warned you, Brian.
Well, that's okay. Dieta is the last. She rates this episode 8 out of 10 Morgan Snipers. All right. Well, it is now time for Awesome Sauce.
Awesome Sauce!
It's like the last remnant of Ruthie in this, well, and the intro. But I will say this. I will just sneak this. Ruthie and I will be working together again very soon, just not on this show. So, I'm not going to go into more, but just a tease. All right. Listener Awesome Sauce, Rima.
Cheryl Rainey Fox says, Rick taking down the Heapsters, Jadis and the Walker. He was in superhero mode.
Yes. I totally agree.
100% agree.
I love that. I loved that.
I love that too. I loved how he was like, you know, using the walker as a handle, you know, with the handle and like, you know, moving it around and stuff.
I loved watching Jadis's face the whole time. Like she's just getting more and more incredulous that this is happening.
It was great just to see some expression on her face. Like she looked like emoting scared. Something. Yeah. Yeah.
She looked legit scared. Oh, and I called that Walker Winslow 2.0.
Yeah, definitely Winslow 2.0. Good call.
Yeah, Winslow Light.
Yeah, okay. Winslow Light is probably better.
Yeah.
Winslow Free Edition for you app users. PB and Zane says, Eugene, I was going for a handshake. LOL, and Dwight stopping Eugene's plan. Oh, and Rick holding Jadis near the walker's head. So many awesome sauces this week.
Yes, I did love him holding that that head, you know, right up to her, and, you know, she's unable to move. She needed that. And I strangely did not have as many problems with the scavengers, the trash people, as I normally do. And I'm actually shocked because I hate them.
I think a lot of it has to do with the fact that they were in a small dose. I mean, a lot of people like Negan a lot more because he's in small doses this season.
Yeah.
Yeah. That was going to be my point, is I think because we didn't get to see as much of them as maybe last week. So they're easier to take.
Well, and the fact that Rick bested them. Too. I think that had something to do with it for me.
Mm-hmm.
And, so smaller dose, they were defeated and, less of them, like you say. It's too bad that not all characters had less. But we'll get into that in a minute. All right. Malika's next. She has two awesome sauce. First is the invasion of the walkers into the sanctuary, even though that was Daryl going rogue and could cost our groups dearly. Maybe Daryl just put himself on the chopping block.
Ruh-roh.
Yep. Second is Rick beating the garbage people with the walker head on the stick. Yes.
Everything's better on a stick.
Yeah, I think so. yeah.
Sorry.
That's okay.
Giggle fit.
I liked it.
Okay. Sorry. Kristen, you're not helping. I know. I am so sorry, Brian. I'm way more professional than this almost 90% of the time. Claire.
Do you not think I'm enjoying this? I'm just sitting back loving it. So.
Claire Lang Redder says, my awesome sauce would be the end of the episode where Rick does battle with his hands tied and in his undies. It goes to show you one tied up, half-naked Rick Grimes is better than five trash holes. I especially loved his no-nonsense negotiating skills at the end. He's as fed up with the trash people as we are. 100% agreed, Claire.
Did you notice that when Rick was negotiating with Jadis, it was very much like when Jadis was negotiating with Negan after that Alexandria fight? She backed down from Negan when he's like 10 or whatever the number sparring was. And then she backed down from Rick. So she obviously sees him as an equal to Negan in negotiating now. Like she's kind of put him in a higher respect almost.
Mm-hmm. She is a terrible negotiator.
And I mean, I totally agree with that, Kristen. I think that she now sees Rick, because Rick was now able to best her. And I think that she's maybe seeing him in a higher regard, maybe has more respect for him than what she did before, because he didn't back down. Where before, I think he wasn't in such a great position to negotiate. He's in a better place now. And that was very satisfying for me whenever he was like, you know, just not having her crap at all.
And so, at the same time, as you're watching it, you're like, oh no, oh no, everything's wrong and you don't know it.
Yes. Yep.
Right. Dieta Patterson says, awesome sauce. Rick kicking Jadis Trash Heapster's butt finally. I was hoping he would finish her.
It's like Mortal Kombat.
Finish her.
Right. I don't know. You know what? I don't like the trash people, but I am interested in Jadis. I think she's really interesting. So I would have been sad if that was the end of Jadis, because then there would have been no reason for her.
I agree. I think it's the Heapsters as a whole that I have an issue with, maybe. But in small doses, I think that they're interesting. And I really loved, because I think some characters, maybe they're not so awesome in and of themselves, but sometimes how they get other characters, like they got Rick to react. I thought that was great. That whole exchange there at the end between Rick and Jadis. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I'm willing to put up with Jadis if I can get things like that out of Rick. So to me, it's worth it.
Yeah.
Agreed. I've been having fun watching Rick this season. It's like old school Rick, but with none of this crap.
Right.
Yeah, the ish crap. Anyway.
Mm-hmm. That ish crap.
So, all right. So it is now time for our own awesome sauce-eye. All right, Rima, why don't you give your first?
So, you know, I always, even with an episode like this one that I had issue with, I always try to find those positives. And one of the positives, even though I wasn't a huge fan of so much Eugene in this episode, I do think Josh McDermott himself did a really great job acting in this episode. He had a lot of lines. I think he had more than what we've had a couple of Eugene-centric episodes. So that's really not that new. And he always does a really great job. But I think this was really great, especially there towards the end when he was when the walker started to come into the sanctuary, and he's kind of starting to flip just a little bit and get very emotional. The emotions that were running across his face, and whenever he went back to confront Father Gabriel, and he just kind of like chose his side. I thought those were really great scenes from him. Yeah. As annoying and I felt that he was, I thought that, you know, Josh McDermott himself did a really good job. I think he always does a really good job. So that's my awesome sauce, at least one of them. My other one was the scene where he tried to kiss Negan's hand instead of taking it and just like as a handshake. I thought that was just gold.
I did too, actually. That was actually really great. Yeah, I had written that one down because, well, it was so strange because, like, Negan put out his hand in such an angle that it looked like he was, like, asking to be, you know, kiss my hand. But
yeah, like kissing the ring of a king or something, yeah. You know, like, you know, that is how he gestured. So, yeah, I can see I might have done the same. I don't know.
No, you would have done the same.
Yeah. Okay. You're totally right. If J.D. extends his hand, I'm kissing his hand. Yeah. For sure.
Of course you are.
That's funny because I thought of it as another manipulation by Negan, the whole handshake thing.
It kind of was. Yeah. I
think he's been manipulating Eugene from the very beginning.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, that was one of my points. I actually like did a little timeline of Eugene and Negan. And I don't know if you remember back when Eugene first arrived at the sanctuary and he was coming out from the sanctuary, I think after he got like a tour or something and he came out into the little courtyard area, and you can hear Negan talking to somebody, probably Simon, saying, "I don't know, I think we're going to have to good cop this and see how far it takes us."
Right.
And from that moment, I knew everything they were doing was, you know, to manipulate Eugene and get him, you know, to be kind of their biggest weapon against Rick. And I just think that it's still going. And now that Eugene has just kind of evolved into, you know, quote unquote Negan, especially like, as you were saying, Rima, him watching all the walkers come in to, into the sanctuary and like his evolution of anger just in his face. I think in that moment he was like, "I'm Negan," you know? Mm-hmm. So. Yeah, I agree with you about Josh McDermott. I thought he did a really, really good job.
I thought that that scene just prior to him going in to see Gabriel, it was kind of like Nerd Hulk smash. He was turning into the Nerd Hulk. Because I'd never seen that particular type of face on Eugene before, you know, how he, it was like he turned, you know,
green.
Yeah, pretty much.
You won't like him when he's angry. Well, I think, you know, that was such a true moment for him. I mean, I think he was really struggling because you saw him kind of being confronted with some of the things that he's done in order to protect himself, since he, you know, which he did not go willfully with Negan. You know, when Negan found out that Eugene was the one that was able to make bullets, he took him. There was really, you know, a negotiation there at all. So it's not like he really had a choice, but he did make a turn eventually to say, well, this seems to be the winning side. This is the side I'm going to hang with. And then we definitely saw that in this episode, but he was kind of confronted with some of those decisions that he's made, and sacrifice to that in order to be with, or to be Negan, I guess. And, you know, I think that we really just saw that come out, that he's, you know, he struggled with it, but yet he come to terms with it, and this is who he is. And we saw his true self, I think, kind of come out. I think some of what he does and says on the shows a little bit, you know, of an act similar to what I think we see with Negan sometimes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I had a theory on that, actually. And it's the only, like, when I watched it live last night, it was literally the only thing I wrote down. I wrote down one thing. And it was, it feels like Abraham's death kind of rebooted Eugene and all that progress that he had made, you know, because he had done some really brave things, and not for self survival. He went out in No Way Out, and he went out with everybody else to kill all those walkers and to claim Alexandria as his. Mm-hmm. He got into the RV knowing it could kill him to take the scent off of Maggie and the others going through mm-hmm. the woods. So he had made significant strides in being a whole person, and watching Abraham die, it was like his brain cracked. And mm-hmm. now all that progress he had made is gone, and he's back in self-survival mode. And now he's with the psychopath, and he's developing and nurturing this psychopath side of survival and what that takes. So it's like you said, Rima, I mean, it's so interesting to watch it played out with such a great actor doing it, because I want to kill him most of the time.
Yeah.
but he's doing it so well. It's the biggest problem.
Yeah.
Those are really good points.
Yeah. It's like he seems to need a strong mentor figure, and you know, he's dead. Yeah. Well, mm-hmm. that's the thing. He had that mentor with Abraham, and he fell apart after Abraham died, because he certainly wasn't getting that from Rick. I mean, that's the thing that I notice. Like, now, not only is he getting that from Negan, but Negan is treating him as an important person in the Savior's organization, and, you know, giving him responsibilities and role that he couldn't have even dreamed to have in Alexandria. And I keep wondering about that, because it's like, you know, he could have had that same role, and yet I don't think he was ever taken seriously in Alexandria. And for that, I kind of have to blame Rick just a tiny, tiny little bit. Because he could have, with a little more nurturing and a little more, you know, responsibility, I wonder if he would have turned to the dark side of the Force. I don't like him being in the dark side of the Force, and it pains me to say what I just said, okay? So anytime I have to criticize Rick, Rick's my guy. I mean, it's difficult for me to say that.
Yeah, I
get it.
But it's true. He did not utilize Eugene and use him to his fullest potential. And Negan kind of is. And, you know, when you look at that, you kind of think, well, you know, if I was in that situation, I could see, if I was like, you know, duplicitous like Eugene is, which I'm not, but if I was, I could kind of see going that, you know, shady side. I wouldn't, but, you know, I could see, you know, if I had no morals, maybe I would.
You think if Rick had given Eugene like some purpose or something, like maybe, you know, I think he felt he had a purpose, or at least when he was playing a role of, you know, early when we were introduced to Eugene and Rosita and Abraham, that, you know, okay, he had this cure that we thought, and which of course we know that he was playing that off anyway. And then finding out that he didn't, but he still kind of had a purpose. He had Abraham as a guide. We lost Abraham and he felt kind of lost. But it seemed like he was doing really great, as Kristen stated. You know, he was serving the group. It wasn't just serving himself, and he was willing to sacrifice himself when they were in the RV and he was trying to lead the Saviors off of their trail. But do you think if Rick had given him purpose, he wouldn't be turning? Or is he... I think he was just willing to go to whoever he was with at the time and keeping him safe. Whoever was keeping him safe is where he was. That's where his loyalty lies.
Yes, I would agree with you on both sides. So yes, he would definitely go to whoever he thinks is going to keep him safe. But he didn't. I think you nailed it when you said that he didn't have purpose over in Alexandria, and he has been given purpose in the Sanctuary. Mm-hmm. And it pains me to say that, but I think that is in fact the case.
Oh, I kind of take issue with that just a little bit.
Fantastic.
So Eugene had found his purpose. The problem is that he had only told Abraham about it. He was going to make ammunition. He had figured out how to do it. He was going to do it. He told Abraham about it. They got in that huge fight. And then shortly thereafter, Abraham died. And I think Rick actually, listen, we've seen Rick break twice. Mm-hmm. What, once after Lori died and then after the woods with Negan. And both of those times, he's no good to anybody. I mean, that's just how he is. He completely breaks. All he wanted to do is make sure nobody else died after Glenn and Abraham died. That's it. He didn't care about anything else. Mm-hmm. And I don't even think Eugene was on his radar because he had always been under the umbrella of Abraham. And Abraham is such a strong character that he knew he didn't have to, like, if Rick doesn't have to worry about it, my guess is he doesn't worry about it. So to add Eugene, a very weak character, into the fold of a very fractured and grief-stricken Rick, I just don't think it's fair to put that on him. Mm-hmm. Only because, you know, Rick had just gotten to the point of, okay, we're going to fight. I'm over this. Like, let's do this. And that was when Eugene was taken, pretty much at that moment.
Yeah.
So I think if Eugene had stayed in Alexandria, it would have been a different story. He would be making ammunition for Rick. He would be a part of the solution, but he never got that opportunity. And instead, he in his grief state, just trying to stay alive, he decided, okay, well, I guess I got to run with this. And I've always thought this was the long con. I don't think that anymore. I think that he's just, this is who Eugene is now. And it just makes me sad and angry.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I'm with you. I really thought this was a long con too. I thought, well, he's just doing what he needs to do to survive. He's playing along. He's doing, you know, what probably other people, there at the sanctuary are doing. They're just, you know, they're doing what they need to do to survive. They have to say what they say because it's like Roman times with Caesar. You can't disagree with Caesar or go against Caesar. You get put down, you get executed, you get taken out. Right. So I thought I wanted to believe, because I always enjoyed Eugene's character, that I thought surely he's not really betraying our group and his heart is still with the group, but he's saying what he needs to say to survive. And I'm with you, Kristen. I don't believe that anymore.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. That's heartbreaking.
It is.
Mm-hmm. It is.
It definitely is. You had another awesome sauce, I see, Kristen.
Oh, me. Yeah.
Yes. You.
I got very happy that we got to talk about Eugene a little bit though. Okay.
Oh yeah. It's as podcast gold.
So it's small, but my other awesome sauce was that we all, I don't know about you, but I make fun of hipsters a lot, which is why I love calling these people the heapsters, because I just love it. And I've got, you know, people in my family, they're all hipsters, and I call them hipsters and I can't stand it. But so what I loved, I just found myself really laughing, is that, you know, everybody's taking all these Polaroid pictures in the zombie apocalypse, right? Like, we've gone back to that technology because we don't have digital cameras or even film or anything like that. So the heapsters just have to, they just have to be more vintage than everybody else. And they're like, here, I'm just going to use this weird camera where I have to replace the light bulb every time, like it's 1920 again or something. And it just made me just laugh hysterically, because it's just, the heapsters are taking hipster to all new levels in this episode.
It makes me wonder, how the heck do they have so many light bulbs for the camera?
She's just tossing them out and she's got them like coming out of her sleeve. I kept trying to figure out where are the light bulbs coming from. She's taken like four pictures and she has unending light bulbs, like the handkerchiefs out of a magician's sleeve.
It's like the never-ending bullets out of the guns. Yeah. It's the never-ending light bulbs. There's just an endless supply.
I just thought it was so great that there was just like this punctuation point put on, yes, these are the hipsters of the zombie apocalypse.
That is great. I love that so much.
It doesn't explain It doesn't explain how they speak, but yeah, that they are definitely acting like hipsters, you know, just kind of strange ones, but well, okay, so I only have one remaining awesome sauce because everyone kind of gave theirs. And this isn't even from the episode. This is from Talking Dead. And it's not terribly flattering. But I have to say, Austin Emilio's use of the verb, if you want to call it, diarrheaing. He said at some point during the during Talking Dead, diarrheaing, and that may not be all that funny to most of you, but my wife and I, we once saw that used in on an episode of Judge Judy, and it was probably like 9 or 10 years ago. It was. You know, we've moved a few times since then. So it was back, you know, when we lived in Cleveland. And we laughed about that particular episode for weeks. We'd go back and listen to the woman say diarrheaing again because diarrhea is a noun. Okay. So how does diarrhea become a verb?
I think it could be a verb.
I don't want to know how it becomes a verb. I don't think I want to know anything about.
Yeah. It's like, okay, well, like to run. Run is a verb. So to diarrhea, like what would it be? To diarrhea? Anyway, it wasn't awesome. It was just funny and kind of rednecky hillbilly. I don't know.
Which I think he is. I think he's a little bit. I think he's from Texas.
So yeah. So
that makes sense.
Anyway, not to make fun of him, but I couldn't believe when he said that. Right after that, my wife, she doesn't watch The Walking Dead, but I had to send her a message to the other room saying, "On Talking Dead, one of the actors just said diarrheaing," and she laughed out loud. So anyway.
We say verbal diarrhea in my house. Mm-hmm. We say, "Oh, I just had verbal diarrhea."
Well, yeah, but I mean, that's not the same as using it as a verb.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah.
All right. Well,
interesting.
Now it is time for weak sauce.
You're worthless and weak.
Which is sometimes called lame sauce.
That sounds awesome.
No, it's lame. Everything's lame.
Laura was the one that started calling it lame sauce, and it's kind of taken on a life of its own. All right. Rima, you are first up to give listener weak sauce.
So Malika Tazi says, lame sauce. The garbage people, duh. I can totally see them backstabbing Rick again.
I can too, for sure.
Mm-hmm.
Cheryl Rainey Fox says, weak sauce, Daryl and Tara going out on their own and probably messing up the plan. I also had problem with Eugene speak. He absolutely made no sense. On The Talking Dead, Josh McDermott said that he asked about Eugene's lines and they told him, yeah, that is confusing, but you can't change the lines. Also, I thought Eugene grew a pair when he got mad, but when Dwight walked into the room, Eugene chickened out.
He definitely did. I wonder if he would have actually told Negan that it was Dwight. It looked like he was going to do it, didn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. He would have if it was just him and Negan, because he would have been under Negan's protection when he did it, but he was too exposed when they walked in. That's just my take on it.
Yeah.
Because he's a chicken.
Cowardly lion.
Has no spine. Yeah.
Let's do the rest of this in singing.
No, let's not.
It was so sweet. I liked it.
So one thing I want to point out, and by the way, this is the first episode with Cheryl. supporting by helping collect all the feedback. So I just want to give a thank you to Cheryl and to Laura. So thank you very much. And I'll give you both the Showcase Award for helping out, because this is tough to do as a single host with guests. So it's so much to organize. But anyway, I'm having a time in my life tonight. Thank you. Laura and Cheryl. Okay. I want to agree 100% with Cheryl's mention of Eugene speak. Like, for example, he says the Wilkes Bar of walkers. I mean, okay, so he's calling them a small city. Where in the hell did he pull out of what orifice Wilkes Bar to describe that? And for that matter, during a critical scene of where he, you know, we were talking about just before when he kind of went into Nerd Hulk, but when he confronted Eugene, when he confronted Gabriel, it seemed like he was almost rapping. It was like a Nerd Eugene rap, and I'm going to play a clip.
The answer is no. I will never not on your nail and be on board with your plan. Your invite is declined. I will not end up like Sasha or you. You both made your choices, what I imagine most would calculate as the right thing. Rolled your D20s and came up dead, seemingly soon to be. I cannot do the same. Now judge me if you choose. But I'm seeing 20 for 20. I'm feeling 10 for 10. I'm receiving 5 by 5. Just staying safe means staying alive. And I'm A-okay with doing whatever it takes to lock that down. So I will obey Negan. I will not cover for anyone's U-turn and loyalties, and I will damn well make sure that Dr. Carson stays cozy, comfy right here in case I ever require healing expertise. And I won't feel bad about it, because I will survive. It's in my biological imperative. It's all I know how to do.
I can see it now. It's going to be on YouTube with a hip-hop soundtrack.
They're gonna loop that. He's definitely got an Eminem thing kind of going.
I know. Yeah.
Oh, I loved it. I thought it was like my favorite. I don't know. That was one of my favorite things of the whole episode.
Well, it was mine too. As far as, I mean, I gave, you know, we were talking, you know, in group and doing, you know, the live chat when the episode was happening. And, you know, I talked about how frustrated I was. You know, I feel like I'm not catching anything about what's happening, or at least what he's saying, because of how he speaks and how he communicates. And it was really frustrating for me. But I did like that scene. I did understand what he was saying, at least in that scene on my first watch. And I thought I loved it because it was so telling. I thought that is Eugene. We are seeing, like, because I feel he hides behind some of that language that he uses. And I feel that, yes, he's still using maybe some uncommon words or verbiage that some of us may not use, but I feel that is his true character. And I really liked that.
Oh, you know what? I just thought of this. It's kind of like he gave Father Gabriel his confession.
Yeah. Oh, that's good. Right. Yeah.
And I mean, Father Gabriel's laying there like to the priest. He didn't go anywhere else with that.
I knew putting the three of us together was going to be podcast gold.
Leave it to Kristen to make these deductions, because she's so great at that. But she is. That's a really good point. I know, you know, Eugene walks out and Father Gabriel's laying there like, what the heck just happened?
He looked really sad and frustrated. I still can't figure it out with him. I still think he's faking it, but that's just neither here nor there.
I hope he's faking it, but it just seems so, I'd say, unlikely at this point, because he had a chance to kind of turn his back on Negan, and he didn't, you know? So
he's a pastor first, you know, priest first.
I mean, this is a long, long con, almost as long as Enid's long con for being a spy.
No. No, I mean, I think he's faking his infection.
Oh. Okay. Yes. That is worth something to discuss about whether he's faking or not. And if he's faking, I guess Dr. Carson's in on it then, wouldn't you say?
Well, He would have to be. I mean, he probably wants to leave just as bad as Father Gabriel does.
Yeah.
I mean, they killed his brother.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, and I had to wonder after it, you know, what the, he's like, I'm seeing 20 for 20, you know, feeling 10 by 10, 5 out of 5 or whatever it was. And I guess it's
coming
like
coming in at a strength of 5 mm-hmm. bars out of 5.
Yeah. That's clearly what it was. It's like 20/20 hindsight, feeling 10 out of 10, I guess, and full signal strength.
So the full signal strength is a radio call, and it's a radio call of strength and clarity. So it basically means that he can hear him loud and clear.
Mm-hmm. Very cool. Mm-hmm. All right. Next week's sauce is from PB and Zane, her real name is Judy. Her weak sauce is watching TV live with so many commercials. Yeah, I think normally she watches it on DVR. She says, makes me want a Blue Moon beer and I don't drink. But for reals, Daryl wanting to go in and kill Negan's group now. Stupid. And I don't ever go against Daryl, but it looks like it may have worked. Well, to that, I have to say, but did it work? I mean, I don't think it looked like to me the saviors got out. And if that did happen, that is going to be very, very, very bad. In fact, I think I made this point, I think, on our mutual Facebook group. And I should mention, this is a great time to mention it since we were just talking about it. We know each other from the Walking Dead cast Patreon Facebook group, because we all contribute to Jason and Karen's Patreon. And these two are two of the most wonderful people that I know. So.
Oh, that's so nice.
That is sweet. Thank you. And you're right, but yeah.
Yeah. Keep going. I mean, obviously.
Yeah. Anyway. So, but yeah, I mean, I would say that it seemed like they got out, right? They didn't, it was not, it backfired.
It totally did not work.
Daryl's plan did not work. No.
Right.
No, yeah. I don't know that. I think even on my third watch, I was still confused as to whether or not they did get out. But, and I won't say anything because I watched the preview, but I think, you know, we'll maybe find out for sure.
I didn't watch it. There was a preview that showed something.
Yeah. Well, it kind of showed
sneak
something.
Peek.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think it alludes to something. So I think we will find out by the next episode. But I don't know that I for sure, because I know they came in and said that they have control of the ground floor, like they're on the upper level and they have the stairs controlled to where they're not the walkers were not able to get up the stairs. But I don't know that that meant that they have gotten out or they escaped yet.
Oh, see, now I want to watch a sneak peek.
Yeah, to me, it seemed like. Them see the problem was, and I brought this up, I think, on the Zedheads Unite group, and that's what the Walking Dead cast Patreon group is called anyway. That I said that I don't think that they ever would have gotten out had they not done it. Like, they would have been pinned down, and they had snipers there, so any kind of effort that they tried to do, you know, the snipers were gonna gun those people down. And mm-hmm. the moment that Daryl drove the hole in and the walkers all poured in, that took control away from our gang. You know, the snipers were no longer effective because they can't see inside, right? So, mm-hmm. so basically the saviors can do whatever the hell they want. They had guns, they had the ammo, but they couldn't use them because they would get picked off. Well, inside the Savior's, you know, sanctuary, they can do whatever they want because they can't really be seen from there. And when they blocked off access to, you know, so everything was on the ground floor. If you saw, they had that like one walkway, and they could just pick them off until they got every last one of them. And then, you know, the ones that were still outside, they don't have to get them all. They just have to get a pile going. And then from there, they can get out, you know, because the pile of walkers will block the other ones from being able to get in. And then they get out. And that's probably what Eugene's plan was, to you know, pick them off one by one, you know, sort of like a turkey shoot. And then, you know, just make a pathway. And once they did that, they got out. So, because that's what it looked like when Rick, you know, looked in his sights. And I will say this, how come he had to look in his sights to see that?
Right. I don't know the answer to that, but wouldn't it be kind of an indication that they did get out based on when Rick found the one sniper that was being eaten by walkers, he was upside down on that pole?
Yep.
I mean, what else would have happened to that sniper if not for being taken out by one of the saviors?
Exactly. Yeah, I completely agree. That's why, you know, like I said,
he's the only one that we saw.
Yeah.
And I don't know that we know how many numbers or how many, you know, snipers that there were surrounding the place. We know Morgan was there, and he mentioned other snipers, but we found a dead one. It looked like he'd been picked off and he'd fallen from this pole. He's hanging upside down, food for walkers. So I think that is a clear indication that they were somehow freed and were able to get away in some manner.
Right.
I think there were four snipers in all, just because they were saying their position north, south, east.
I counted four as well.
Okay. Morgan was one. That's only because they used
Morgan direction. Was one. And, you know, then they had, I watched it with the captions and it was like man one, two, and three, even though man number two clearly seemed to be a woman. So.
Yep.
All right.
That one was lost on me. But yeah, thanks for that.
All right. Let's move on. Rima, you've got another one for
So Claire Lang Redder says, my weak sauce is Mr. Eugene Porter. I realized after this episode, Eugene, it's much better in small doses. The way he talks is almost as annoying as the trash people. The fact that he's so Negan now makes me pretty mad too.
Yeah, I had largely the same kind of take on it, that it was almost too much Eugene. And it wasn't just too much Eugene speaking, but it was just too much of his mentally whatever the deal is. I've often thought that he might have Asperger's syndrome. I don't know if he does, but he's certainly an odd duck.
Mm-hmm.
And it was a lot. Like, normally Eugene is kind of like a secondary character, and for him to kind of take the lead in this episode, which I think is probably the first time that he's completely been in this position. I mean, we've seen him, like in Hostiles and Calamities last season, you know, he was pretty prominent, but I don't think he was like this prominent. It was a lot. That's all I have to say. It was a lot. So
I agree.
All right. We got one more.
Dieta Patterson says, weak sauce, Eugene, all day, every day. He is a traitor. So Eugene, like, just, okay, so does that mean, like, you don't like Eugene, the character, or what he's doing, or the fact that he's a traitor, or just all of it?
Mm-hmm.
Probably all of it.
I tend to think, knowing Dieta, and, you know, she's been a long time contributor to this podcast, I would have to say, all of it. If I had to guess.
Whole package.
Yep. All right. It's now time for our weak sauce. And since you went last, Kristen, I'm going to give my weak sauce first. And I will say this, of all the people to get sick, you know, we've seen, like, from this show and from Fear the Walking Dead, you know, it's practically like on Fear, it's practically like they're putting on makeup or something. So considering how much we've seen them go into Walker Guts, the one character that would get sick from it, Gabriel. What a shock.
I don't think he's sick.
I think That's a good point, Kristen. But I also, do we know? Okay, so if he is sick, let's err on that and just say, okay, he is sick.
Okay.
Do we know that that's even what made him sick? I mean,
he could have been sick.
That, I mean, they're saying he's got an infection, maybe too, and he's close to organ failure and shutdown. But no, it doesn't say that he's like infected, like he's been infected, like when they get bit,
right,
or something like that. So, I mean, we've seen, you know, like remember in season three with the illnesses, when people were coming down with the illnesses in the prison. I mean, there are still like other things than being bit by a walker or being infected by, you know, being covered in walker guts that can make you sick. Maybe he's just, you know, contracted something else.
Like he has a weak constitution.
Yeah. I mean, maybe he had some bad pork or something. I don't know.
Possible. Well, I agree. I heard last week, Karen from Walking Dead cast had mentioned that she cannot believe that people have not gotten tetanus yet. And I told, and I was like, yes, you know what? Yes.
I said the same thing. They're sitting there. Jadis was sculpting with naked with just an apron on. I go, well, there's a good place to be nude. Like there's all this metal, sharp metal laying around. I said the exact same thing. I'm with you.
Yeah. And you know, he was, captive by the trash people. You know, that's how we first meet the trash people. So maybe he caught something there and it finally just, you know, festered for a while and now he's sick from it. But, and to your point, Rima, just to correct you, it was season four of the prison, sickness, but
was it four?
Yeah,
oh Lord, I'm embarrassed.
No, that's okay.
What did you say?
I said three. Oh. I was thinking the back half of three, but yep, it was four.
Yeah. But anyway,
right before Herschel died.
Yeah. He was nursing everyone to health.
Just so people know, my dog is named Herschel. I got a thing for Herschel.
Yes.
What was that?
You didn't hear that?
Sweet.
No, I did. That was cute.
Yeah, I forgot about that. What kind of dog is your dog, Herschel?
He looks like an old man dog.
Oh,
he's a shelter pup. It's white with whiskers. I'll post up a picture if you'd like to see him. He's very cute.
Those are the best.
I met Scott Wilson with a photo op at Walker Stalker Philadelphia, and I brought a picture of Herschel with me, and we held my picture of Herschel. Taking a picture with Herschel. It was cute.
I remember that.
Sweet.
Yeah. Well, anyway, the other point about like on Fear, you know, and I mentioned we've seen them do this so many times. Not as much time has passed as we had just talked about earlier. So that, you know, let's say it's 2 years further, maybe even 3 years further. Well, that does give time for disease to spread from, you know, I don't know, dead corpses, fecal matter, and all of the wonderful things, you know, that goes with decay. So, I mean, there's a lot of disease and decay with the walker, so it doesn't necessarily have to be a bite to get sick. You know, and, you know, if he got some in, you know, some pour or, you know, accidentally swallowed a little bit, or something, you know, it could have gotten them sick. And I'm actually, even though, you know, I kind of made fun of him there, I'm actually surprised this hasn't happened before. I mean, it's taken this long for this to actually happen. I would have thought that this would have happened.
Yeah, because we do see that quite often on both sides, the good guys and the bad guys covering themselves up with guts. So you're right. If this is what it's from, and I'm not saying it's not, because I certainly don't know one way or another. I'm just trying to, you know, kind of play devil's advocate for a moment that, you know, we are in the zombie apocalypse. We don't exactly have access to all the modern medicines. We don't have the best, you know, maybe sanitation conditions or cooking conditions.
Right.
You know, it could be something that he's gotten sick from, you know, bad food, undercooked food, some other type of illness or something that's out there.
Right.
You know, I don't know. It's just, that's just, I think, one of many theories. Or it could also be, as Kristen said, maybe he's not sick at all. And he got the doctor to, which he faked it pretty good. If he's faking it in the previous episode when Eugene found him, or when got him out of the little cell that they were keeping him in, that sweaty shaking thing he had going on was pretty convincing.
Yeah.
That's for sure.
The sweat could have been from the power outage.
It's true. It was hot.
Being in a hot box, and maybe he thought, I'm going to use this, but you know,
it's true. Maybe to get out of that cell and into a medical bed is a lot better conditions. So
yeah,
you're right.
I'm going to save my last weak sauce for the end, but there's just one word in the doc to say what I'm going to say now, which is, I thought Eugene's drone and trying to get the walkers out with a stupid little, you know, propeller airplane was quite weak. And how the heck could it possibly, a stupid little, you know, first generation iPod generate enough sound to bring all the walkers away? You know, I thought that was kind of lame.
It's magic of Apple.
Yeah, I mean, what? It seems to me like, you know, a flaming, you know, arrow going into something that would, you know, get go on fire would have been more effective than that stupid little airplane. So that was a weak sauce that I'm gonna say now. So Kristen, you got a couple?
I do. You know, one of them was little. It's just, I hate that Eugene is a savior. I hate it. It makes me feel ill just watching him roam around the sanctuary and talk to Negan and have so much power. And I just hate it. I hate every second of it. I just thought Eugene was better than that, but he's not. So it is what it is. But my biggest one, my biggest weak sauce, lame sauce, yucky sauce is Daryl and Tara. Daryl and Tara. You know what? Yeah. And I got to tell you, if this is the end of Daryl, if this is how they're choosing to end Daryl, and I'm not saying that they are, this is the worst way. This is such a middle finger to the fans out there if this is how they're going to do it. So this better not be the end of Daryl, because I swear to you, he's been such an amazing, complex, riveting character at times that I just can't even explain my disappointment if this is the end of Daryl. I cannot see him. It's just, you know, I like it when the writers write true to their characters, and I don't think they're writing true to Daryl right now.
Yeah.
I agree. Preach it, sister. For reals.
The whole thing, I mean, I just don't, I don't know. Him slamming into the sanctuary when he knows that there's a plan. And as Michonne said, the plan is working. Okay, so what are you doing, Daryl? What are you doing? Tara, what are you? Tara's been off her game since Denise died. You know, she told Daryl to kill Dwight, and she's been, you know, kind of just off the reservation. But, you know, in my opinion, Daryl, if Rosita and Michonne are gone, they're gone. Like, look around. You got the crazy guy up in the sniper hole that, you know, clears from time to time. And you've got Tara, who is, you know, not really a varsity player. That's who you have right now to do whatever you're doing.
Well, what does that tell you? I mean, like you said, Rosita left, Michonne left. Does that not clue you in a little bit that maybe this is not the best decision moving forward?
Yeah.
And he said it is for me. He said it was worth losing us, losing who he is. And I don't know, because when Michonne said, is it losing us? And he said it is for me. I don't know if he meant it's okay if he dies, or if it's okay that he loses who he's with, or if it's okay. Like, there, to me, that was a conversation that needed to be continued.
Yeah.
Yeah. I agree. I think he's been away from Carol too long. Carol really grounded him. I feel with that relationship that they have. And she's spent a lot of time at the kingdom, and they've had a reunion since then. I mean, he knows she's alive. They've communicated. He, understood where she was at when she was alone in her, small little house outside the kingdom area. And, they've had communication since then, but I think he spent so much time away from her. I think she would have been one to really help pull him out of what he experienced at the Savior's. And I don't want to make light of that. I mean, I think right. that when he was a prisoner there and the things that he had to endure and go through and, just try to survive long enough to get away was horrible. So I don't downplay that by any means, but I think that she would have been one to really help pull him back and try to get him back. And maybe his actions would have been different yeah. had she been around
right.
more.
I yeah. think you're right. And I think that she did do that in the season premiere. I mm-hmm. think that he kind of reverted back to that PTSD. I think he got triggered by PTSD when him and Rick were clearing out that weapons armory that was supposed to be there. And mm-hmm. he saw that prison cell that looked yes. like his prison cell. I think that's when we lost Daryl the rest yeah. of the season.
Yeah. It all came back to him. Yeah, you're right.
Yeah.
Because that was a moment. They made sure to make us notice that moment. I mean, mm-hmm. that was kind of specific in that moment. And you were meant to see that for a reason, I feel. So, yeah, you're right.
Yeah. So, to kind of add to that, yeah, the fact that Rosita, who was so gung-ho to want to kill, Negan, she was actually the voice of reason. And then, Michonne, also realizes that, she doesn't want to do it. To me, from what I saw, like Dwight said, all they had to do was just keep things as is, let the, starve the saviors out, and the whole thing will play for itself. Mm-hmm. But he had to take that plan.
And you blew it! You blew it! You blew it! You blew it! You had it all and you blew it.
Yeah, Daryl and Tara and I guess Morgan too. You blew it. Okay, so my last weak sauce, and this again wasn't so much what was on the, part of this story, but it did have to do with the end of the episode. And if you watch this on, like if you buy it on iTunes or Google Play, you wouldn't have seen this, but if you watched it on AMC, you would have seen it, because they mentioned that, watch live because you will want to experience what is going to happen at the end of the next episode. And I thought to myself, has the show's rating sunk so low that they have to tell us to make sure we watch live because we want to be a part of the social media sensation that will happen as a result of the end of the episode? Like, it reminds me of, going back to previous mid-season finales, like, Sophia coming out of the barn. That was pretty, jaw-dropping. Even mm-hmm. when Beth, died rather unexpectedly in the fifth
AMC
season finale.
Ruined that.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I heard about that. But anyway, those are two examples where, other than the fact that their social media failed with Beth, they didn't say, hey, make sure you watch live because we're going to probably kill somebody and it's going to shock you all who it's going to be, or whatever is going to happen is going to be shocking and we'll all be talking about it. I just thought to myself, that's such a gimmick. It's like they're really having to do stunt announcements like this just to make sure that people watch live to keep the ratings intact. I thought it was just disappointing. And I guess it goes to show you, how much ratings have gone down, in the past season and a half.
Yep. I think they're noticing.
Yep. All right. Well, it is now time for our regular feedback.
Does Rima had weak sauce? Does she not get it?
No. I thought she already gave it.
Uh-uh.
Oh, I'm sorry. I didn't know. Okay.
I got you, Rima.
Thank God.
Kristen, you got my got six. You.
Thank you, Kristen. Thank Kristen. God for you.
I say that every day. I really do. Kristen keeps me sane.
Yeah.
Well, we've covered, I had two, and one has been covered, I think, pretty extensively. It's mostly about Eugene, his excessive talking and his strange verbalization. So I will not go into that anymore. But one point, and I don't know if I can really qualify it so much as weak sauce, but I felt like it was like there needed to be some further conversation when Michonne was in the truck with Daryl and she's talking about, she says, well, maybe we don't get to know why this or know if this works. And so I'm like, why would they not get to know? So I was just kind of confused with what she was saying about that. It almost felt to me like the writers were speaking to us as an audience, like, because we've, I think, complained, at least I know I have complained a lot this season. I'm okay. I'm with you, Kristen, a lot of the time. This is where I kind of differ with some other people, you know, who complain about storylines. I hold faith in the writers all the time that they like, I may not always agree with what they're showing us and telling us, but I have faith that they're, whatever they show and tell us is for a reason and it's going to lead somewhere. This was one of the episodes that I faltered with that a little bit, but it almost felt like, you know, because we've complained a lot, or some of us have complained about not knowing what the plan is, and maybe we're not supposed to know. And it felt like Michonne was kind of speaking to us through the writers that, you know, maybe you don't get to know what this plan is, how it's supposed to work, what's gonna be happening here. So I thought that there was just more to that. I didn't quite know where she was going with that, and that she was just okay with not, maybe just not participating, but just okay with not knowing how it went. I'm like, well, I would want to know,
yeah,
if it's succeeding or not.
I think, because I've listened to that, you know, more than once. I thought it was a really good speech by her, actually. Mm-hmm. And I think it was kind of Michonne's take on what Rosita was saying to her earlier. Mm-hmm. And it kind of was a theme of the episode, was this idea of waiting. You know, in the beginning, Dwight, you know, tells Eugene, listen, man, all you have to do is wait. Just wait. Wait. Right. And you can come on the winning side of this. Just do nothing. Right. And Eugene, what does he do? He does the opposite of that, right?
Right.
He builds a drone and tries to fly it into walkers with a one pod. And then Rosita, you know, says to Michonne, and by extension, everybody else, you know, listen, you know, I think it's okay to wait. Let's just, why is it easier to come out here and risk it versus going back to Alexandria and waiting on what's happening? And so I think Michonne internalized this and kind of tried to get at Daryl that way by saying, you know, listen, what's happening right now is working. So it's okay if we don't know if it's going to work. If it's okay that we don't know what's happening right now. If what's happening right now is working right now, then let's just wait and see what happens. You know, why don't fix it if it ain't broke? So I guess I took it as going along with the theme of waiting.
That's a good point, which we can see Daryl did not, and we saw how that turned out.
Yeah. And that's my take as well, Kristen, that it did seem like it was a question of Michonne was willing to wait, and for that matter, so was Rosita. And I was actually kind of surprised by Rosita's attitude, because I thought she was going to be, more gung-ho about it than anyone. But if you think about it, you know, she was saved by Sasha, and, you know, she was also injured during that whole thing. And I guess that gave her time to reflect and kind of mature, I think, from this. So,
When she said, I believe in Rick Grimes, I about fell out of my seat.
Yeah.
Yeah. You, me, both.
And I believe that's a line from the comic book, right? But it's Maggie that says it.
Oh, I don't know.
Yeah. I believe that's the case. All right. We are going to cut it a little short, sort of, and complete the feedback in another episode, because let's face it, listeners, this is an amazing discussion, is it not? So if you would like to send us feedback, go to goldenspiralmedia.com/feedback, where you can submit text or audio. and use the SpeakPipe widget, or you can use the voicemail, which is 304-837-2278. You can also send us email at walkingdeadgsm@gmail.com. But like most people, you can submit your feedback through the Facebook group, which is at facebook.com/groups/walkingdeadgsm. And if you aren't a member, Eugene would say,
are you serious?
That is brand new for this week. So the deadline for submitting feedback is normally 6 p.m. Eastern, 5 p.m. Central, the Tuesday after the episode has aired. And for the finale, that is going to be the case. You can also reach us on Twitter at WalkingDeadGSM. I will say also, I might as well give this now. We got another 5-star review this time from last week's co-host, Steve Brown. So thank you for your review. Subscribe to us and hopefully give a rating and review yourself. You can go to goldenspiralmedia.com/apple to do that. And other ways to support us would be at goldenspiralmedia.com/support. So in a few days, you will hear another episode with these lovely ladies, and we are going to go over your feedback and also our other notes from this episode, because this is gold, baby. Pure gold. So we're gonna do this in two parts. So until later this week, I'm Brian.
And I'm Rima.
And I'm Kristen.
And this is the Walking Dead Talk Through. Good night, everybody.
Good night.
Night-night.